We're back from Washington on LBC, and it's time to wrap up our special programme from the US Capitol. I told you before the break that I've been doing a lot of travelling this year, and I spent quite a bit of time in China. And every time I pass through the airport in Beijing, there's a huge poster telling travellers what they can't bring on an aeroplane. Obviously, guns, ammunition, hand grenades, dangerous chemicals, and all of that stuff. But I am always bemused to see that tucked away in the middle of the list is a crystal ball. Now, I have no idea why anyone would need to bring a crystal ball onto an aircraft. And presumably, if you've got one and you don't already know it's banned from the aeroplane, then it can't be much of a crystal ball in the first place. But anyway, we are going to gaze into ours. I am joined by the Brits, or at least two of the Brits who cover events here in Washington on an ongoing basis. With me, David Rennie of The Economist and Robert Moore from ITV News. And thank you both very much for joining me. David, as we've rattled through the last 2 hours, we have barely heard from a Democrat. There is no leader of the opposition in this country, of course, but it has seemed that in 2017, the Democrats are a bit leaderless and rudderless, still licking their wounds from last year's election. How are they going to fare in 2018?
Well, 2018 will tell us two things about the future of the Democratic Party. One is, obviously, there's some big elections at the end of the year, which will decide who controls Congress. And in this strange moment that we live in, everyone understands that that question, who controls Congress, is also the question, will Donald Trump be impeached next year? Because if Democrats take control of Congress, then about 5 minutes after swearing in the new Democratic majority, they will impeach Donald Trump. So that's the stakes. That's understood in the White House. People have told Donald Trump to his face that that is what's at stake. But there's also going to be an awful lot of activity looking to 2020 and the next presidential election. And you can already see a long, long list of people, all of whom figure that they are the answer to the question, what's the opposite of Donald Trump? Because it's a reasonable bet that the opposite of Donald Trump is not a bad thing to be at the next presidential election. And so you're going to see a giant pre-kind of contest already as early as next year underway.
Robert, in the midterm elections, a Republican drubbing and then the possibility of the impeachment of the president?
Well, David is confident that 5 minutes after a Democratic victory in the midterm elections, there'll be an impeachment. Of course, there is the kind of more cynical view, actually, Donald Trump staying in the White House is a more palatable opposition to run against in 2020. And, you know, the fact that there is a crisis in the Democratic Party is very clear from the fact that if you look at the two front runners, you could say it's maybe Joe Biden and Bernie Sanders, both elderly statesmen of the Democratic Party. But the fact that there is that sort of generational crisis in the party, I think, suggests that we can take nothing for granted going into 2018.
Is Hillary Clinton going to run again?
Well, no, I think her time is done. Of course, she was her humiliation is deep. She's wounded. And I think her desire, her appetite for further politics is very, very close to zero.
David, the Trump team says, and we heard Nigel Farage say it earlier on the programme, global respect is back for the United States. Is America going to be the indispensable nation in 2018?
Does America want to be the indispensable nation? I think that's actually the question that allies are asking. So you get this line from Team Trump. I mean, I traveled over the course of 2017 a couple of times with the U.S. Defense Secretary. I traveled with Mike Pence, the Vice President, to Latin America. And basically, their kind of line, particularly Mike Pence, a sort of loyal Vice President, is it's like a sort of accidental Ronald Reagan, that maybe he's a bit rough around the edges, maybe the tweets are not always kind of presidential, but the fact that he's kind of talking tough, doesn't take any nonsense, everyone understands that America is kind of back on the world stage. The problem with that theory is if you look around the world at the big countries of the world, look who's happy, look who's not happy. The countries that look pretty pleased at the moment are the Chinese and the Russians. They think there's a vacuum which they get to fill. And the countries who look a bit green around the gills are the oldest and most loyal allies like Britain. Look at how comfortable it is for Theresa May to be the special relationship best friend.
Even though, Robert, the new national security strategy says that essentially the United States is in a battle for war, even though, Robert, the new national security strategy says that the United States is essentially in a war for influence with China and Russia. I mean, there's elements to that national security strategy that you'd think would make for uncomfortable reading in Beijing.
Sure. And we saw, you know, we saw this last week, though. I mean, just how lamentable American diplomacy can be at the moment in this kind of nationalist and quasi-isolationist mode. And we saw it at the UN General Assembly during this vote on Jerusalem when, you know, America said they were going to count the names of those who supported them. I mean, it was a key moment for Nikki Haley and Donald Trump. And the only people who supported the United States were some, you know, Pacific Island nations and a couple of others, Israel, obviously, Togo in West Africa. And that tells you all you need to know. I mean, key allies, you know, the oldest of the oldest allies, Britain, France, Japan, all voting against the United States. I mean, this is the weakest I've ever seen America's face to the world. It's, you know, inward looking, it's nationalist. And frankly, at the General Assembly last week, it was pitiful.
And so, David, what does that all mean for North Korea and where that story goes in 2018?
So I think you've got this very odd dynamic at the moment that the fact that North Korea is behaving as badly as you could possibly behave has brought the Americans and the Chinese somewhat closer together. The Chinese are still not ready to pull the plug on North Korea. They're still, you know, only doing sort of lip service to the idea of sanctions that might change North Korea's behavior. But that said, you know, if you talk to officials who've been in the room when Xi Jinping and Donald Trump met, or even when Xi Jinping was talking to Barack Obama, I was told by a former U.S. ambassador to China, the rudest he's ever heard President Xi Jinping of China be about anyone is talking about the North Korean leader. The Chinese are very, very fed up. But here's the problem for U.S.-China relations and kind of global stability. If North Korea suddenly announces it has all the bombs it wants, it really does feel it can attack America with nuclear missiles, then everything changes. The things that have been bringing U.S.-China relations kind of to a point of agreement, they suddenly fly apart because America then needs to do lots more missile defenses in South Korea, more aircraft carriers in the waters off North Korea. All the things the Chinese will most hate will be the things that the Americans will have to do. So it could get very, very bumpy.
And David, there's a temptation to say that the president, with all the difficulties that he's had with members of his own Republican Party on Capitol Hill during 2017, can't get stuff done. But in some areas, the environment, the reduced role that the State Department plays, the coarsening of the discourse here, he's actually changed the country.
Well, here's the fascinating thing. I mean, we all spent a lot of time on the campaign trail. You know, Robert and I were at Trump rallies throughout the kind of the election period, and we heard him saying two kind of big things. One was he had these gigantic promises to bring back the factory jobs and all these populist kind of things he was going to do, and he was going to drain the swamp and kind of completely change the way Washington works. Well, he hasn't delivered all those kind of millions of factory jobs back. And actually, the things that he's achieved, instead of draining the swamp, he has achieved quite a lot. You're right, Simon. But they've all been kind of swamp ink productions. You know, you do the checklist of the things he has actually achieved. Gigantic tax cuts, basically written by the Republicans in Congress. He appointed a very conservative new Supreme Court justice. It's the first thing any Republican mentions if you ask them, what has Trump done? But that was delivered to him on a silver tray by Republican leaders in Congress, the very people he says he despises. So actually, the only things he's really got done are a kind of wish list of pro-business, elite establishment Republicans in Washington. His stuff, the stuff Robert and I watched him saying on campaign platforms, he hasn't delivered. There's no wall. There's no millions of jobs back.
Mm. And you talk about, Simon, you know, draining the swamp and that whole concept that he campaigned on. I mean, I was spending some time a couple of nights ago with some Republican donors and lobbyists, and they were absolutely giddy with success. I mean, they could not believe this was like a bonanza for them. They had never had a more exhilarating few months than they had on Capitol Hill over the last 8 weeks. Admit, you know, just completely driving and shaping this tax bill. I mean, this was the absolute kind of definition of what Trump had meant on the campaign trail by describing Washington as a swamp. This swamp is deeper now than I've ever seen it.
And let me ask you, Robert, about some of the stories you've covered this year, because you've obviously seen and reported some astonishing things in 2017. Your coverage of Hurricane Harvey comes to mind. You know, obviously, we all reported the Las Vegas shootings and the fallout from them. And then the Harvey Weinstein scandal, which, of course, has created not just ripples, but massive waves throughout American society. What happens specifically about that in 2018? More fallout? Criminal trials? Are we going to see Kevin Spacey and Harvey Weinstein and others in the dock? Is there more to come?
Yes, yeah, certainly there's more to come. I mean, look, anybody working in pretty much any high-profile sort of ego-driven industry in America is very conscious that what we're looking at so far is the tip of the iceberg. You know, men with power misbehaving in the work environment is prevalent. It's it reaches every corner of corporate America, every newsroom in America, every political party in America. So sure, there are going to be consequences and sort of cascading fallout from this throughout 2018, undoubtedly.
And David, any political consequences for Donald Trump, given that there are women out there who have made allegations about his behaviour, each one of whom has been called a liar by the White House?
For the moment, there doesn't seem to be any kind of danger for him. I mean, this is the remarkable thing, is defenders of Donald Trump have a point when they say they're being cynical, but they have a point. They say it's not as if the voters didn't know this when they went into the polling booths in November 2016. I mean, there can be no doubt if you're worried about Donald Trump being a sexual harasser, he's on tape talking about harassing women sexually. The remarkable thing, there was a pretty depressing poll. The Economist does a poll with YouGov. And last week we asked a question about did people believe Donald Trump when he said it wasn't his voice on the tape that came up during the election, the Access Hollywood tape where he talked about grabbing women. And Donald Trump has recently started saying that wasn't his voice. Now half of Republicans agree with him that that wasn't his voice, even though he admitted during the election that it was his voice. So now it's really that kind of moment from Orwell, from 1984, where the numbers swim in front of your eyes and you find yourself believing that two and two do not make four.
And, of course, that does kind of talk to one of the great successes of the Trump presidency. You know, we talk about whether it's a consequential first year. And one of the great sort of successes from his perspective is he has sown doubt, skepticism about, you know, mainstream reporting and news journalism. And so one of the great successes of 2017 from the perspective of the White House is to have successfully planted the seed of fake news. And now even quite mainstream Republican voters will doubt what otherwise was conventional, you know, news reporting. And it's very worrying.
And as we end the year, let me raise a pet foible, which is an issue that I just don't understand about the Trump White House. This country lost a lot of talent during 2017. Mary Tyler Moore, Tom Petty, Chuck Berry, David Cassidy, Don Rickles, Jonathan Demme. The list goes on and on and on. And you hardly ever see a statement of tribute from this president, as you've always seen from presidents past, to Americans who have made significant contributions to public life here. Why not?
Well, if you're waiting for Donald Trump to be magnanimous and to say, goodness me, I'm now president of the world's most powerful country, I'm going to be generous-spirited and not want to hog the headlines, I think we've been waiting for that to happen. It hasn't happened yet, and it's never going to happen.
Bizarre, isn't it?
Bizarre, yeah. I mean, look, we expected at every stage of this, of following the trajectory of Donald Trump, for the presidential pivot. And, you know, one year on, as David makes quite rightly clear, there is no pivot. There will be no pivot. We have the man in the White House who we know. It's Donald Trump. He's not going to be magnanimous. He's not going to be a conventional president in any sense of that word.
Well, it's going to be an interesting 2018. I hope you both get a good Christmas rest. David Rennie of The Economist, Robert Moore of ITN, or as they insist on calling it now, ITV News. Thanks to both of you.
Thank you.
Thank you.